Mondays with Mike. Mondays with Mike.
Mondays with Mike. You want to talk about unions?
Sure. Yeah, we can talk about unions.
Okay, so the article from The Atlantic titled "The Wrong Way to Win Back the Working Class" said that there were two schools of thought as to what should be done now. Be even more pro-union than Biden was. And I think he was among the most pro-union U.S. presidents in modern American history. Be even more pro-union or go back to a more tentative standpoint, and unions at that point would be another block to be dealt with and stuff, but you wouldn't cave to all demands. What is the solution, political science professor Mike? What is the solution? What do we do?
I'm not a professor.
Speaking symbolically here.
Yeah, I actually am more on the side of going all in on supporting unions and increasing union membership in labor, because politics is people, and the way that the winds are going for capitalism and the economy is that people are going to start getting replaced with AI and robots. The only real leverage labor has in capitalism is a union in terms of getting corporations to even do anything. Unless you can speak as like a unified voice in terms of any kind of working conditions, demands, labor, etc. The problem is that workers divided are easier to treat much worse, right? To pay less, give them less hours, not give benefits like health insurance, retirement, you name it. And unions are effectively the only bulwark, the only defense that workers have if the government's not on their side. That's the whole point of the things like the Department of Labor and some of the laws in place protecting union membership, union participation, is that if people don't have a means of challenging their treatment as employees, then it becomes really easy for them to be paid absolute minimums, right? The lowest amount of money to get easily replaced with robots and AI, to get cast aside as important than the overall structure of making money in the country, of the diminishing return of labor, essentially. Unions are like the only thing that people have as a tool to address that. It's a bad idea, I think, to back away from that particular movement or struggle. The Democratic Party has to pick a side, and the winds, as it were, in terms of the direction the economy is going, the direction that future societies are going, is humans being replaced in terms of labor. And the problem with that for a political party is that politics fundamentally is people. Unless we're going to give AI the right to vote, and what a weird future that would be, unless we're going to have machines participate in our political society, there's going to be a real reckoning of people becoming not obsolete, but certainly diminished in their ability to gain any kind of employment, any kind of income. And if you don't come up with a solution to that, like a basic income, or we talked about stuff like make work stuff, like the article mentioned, I think it was Keynes, John Maynard Keynes, like it would be more economically productive to just pay people to dig holes and then fill the holes, right, than to not have them do anything. It's like government can be the employer of last resort, and unions are a way to at least have some negotiating position with respect to any kind of employment. I'm actually on the side of agreeing that the Democratic Party needs to just go 100% all in on supporting unions, labor rights, you name it, because union participation in the United States is just way down compared to the rest of the developed world, and not so much places like Japan and South Korea, but most of Europe, they've got very high levels of union participation and membership because unions form like the only tool that workers have really to gain any kind of leverage. And obviously capital doesn't like that, right? They don't like being told no, or we're not going to work unless you pay us like enough to exist. But we are headed in a strange direction, right? Because it's like a post-industrial revolution, essentially, where there really is this strange path being charted forward in terms of AI and robots, that it has the potential to lead to a neo-feudalism if the serfs don't figure out a way to actually maintain employment, right?
So, here's something I see about it. The good news that I see is that AI doesn't vote, people vote. And the bad news that I see is, according to Gallup, 8% of US adults belong to a union. Seems low. And then as low as 6% in the private sector. And if you think about that, if you think about 94% of those in the private sector not in a union, being in a union is going to be foreign to a lot of them. And it doesn't seem like unions would be in a position to help them if so few are members.
So
Now, maybe
this is where I have to disagree.
Okay.
Unions are in some respects, the only voice in the economy that effectively can challenge some of the worst practices that happen. If there are no unions, even if there's low union participation, it's better than none, because the alternative is what we had pre-unions, right? Where you had like crazy the jungle, like kids in meat packing factories getting ground up into the machines, right? Like the situation is that unions are the only bulwark. They're the only defense in some respects against the worst practices. And here's the way to think about it, unfortunately. Just because union participation in the United States is low doesn't mean union participation in the world economy is low. If US workers want a larger slice of the pie, like they need to get with the program in terms of joining unions and participating in unions and labor, because otherwise we're going to be missing out on all the stuff that people in other parts of the world are getting, that we could be getting. If we're getting employed for the same jobs, but we're not getting vacations, healthcare, better pay, retirement, but people in, I don't know, Belgium and Germany and parts of Europe are getting those things for the same exact job. That just means the message sucks in the United States for getting people to join unions. Not that the unions are bad, because I think what's missing in this conversation is like these things don't exist in a vacuum. Just because participation is low in the United States doesn't mean that participation is bad. Any participation, any, is better than none. And the thing with the Democratic Party, because it's such a big tent, is they have to make a choice. They either are on the side of unions and labor or they're not. And we right now we're seeing this what the situation is with the not category, with Trump and what he's doing in terms of like reducing the ability of public sector employees to collectively bargain and to have unions and to have any kind of leverage for government work. We're seeing that happening right now in real time. And it's not pretty. A lot of people are getting fired. A lot of people are resigning. And this is what puzzles me still about the priorities of the American voter. For some reason, they want the benefits of government, but they don't want government, if that makes sense. Like they want better things. They want lower prices. They want roads. They want the list is actually pretty extensive, like the things that they want. But they view government as both the solution and the problem, which is, it's just this lot, it's this weird dissonance, right? This cognitive dissonance of I want better things, but the way to get to those better things, I don't want. And that, I think, is the struggle of what the article is talking about. It's like Biden was all in on unions. And for whatever reason, the unions didn't have his back when it came to Kamala Harris. And I think that what was missing in that conversation and in the article was the fact that it was Kamala Harris, right? That it wasn't Biden anymore who was running, and that people very much, right, would have voted still for Joe Biden because he still had that political capital and that sort of gravitas. It's just the fact that they switched their lead runner of the marathon, the baton pass mid-race, right? The problem was that when you switch at the very last second of, is what it seemed like. All that work that went into building up Biden as pro-union, pro-labor, as reliably blue, all that stuff, like it just went away and you're left with what happened, right? Which was that there wasn't enough time to build a winning campaign.
Yeah, I did not mean to imply that only a small percentage of the private sector are in unions, therefore necessarily unions don't have a place. What I more meant was along the lines of only 6% of them are in unions. Why? And does this need to be remedied for them to have an effect? Instead of an effect, I should have said a decisive effect.
I get what you're saying. What matters more even than unions is the collective bargaining ability of the workers. The answer to that is that to have a decisive effect, you don't even need that many. You just need enough that they get a seat at the table. The whole point here is that so long as the workers of the country have some level of collective bargaining, they can argue for protections and benefits and lobby for any number of things for workers of all levels of employment, even if they're not in unions. That's the whole point. And the thing here is that the political parties made a choice, and they're making a choice every day of whether they support the employers or the employees. And the Democratic Party, for better or worse, has almost always been on the side of the employees' side of the equation, much more than the employers' side of the equation, because the Republican Party is squarely in that camp with the tax cuts and the reduced funding and not supporting universal health care. Because remember, something like universal health care, that's a very much a huge benefit for employers in the United States, because employers are the ones that pay the greatest amount of health care costs for employees, right? It's a benefit of employment, not something that most employees are forced to put the cost themselves. But the whole point here is that for unions to make a decisive difference in the election, that's a little bit different. You would have to have a lot more union membership in the swing states in particular. That one's more difficult. I think the issue I have maybe with the way this conversation is being framed is that it's making it seem like it's an either or, that the Democrats either need to like increase more union whatever demands or requests or proposals, or they have to go in a different direction. It's not quite that simple, right? If the Democrats abandon unions, it's not like the Republicans are defending unions or benefiting unions. It'll lead to a really weird situation where the unions might not stick with either party. They have to make a decision because the benefits still outweigh the costs of supporting unions, in my mind. The issue I have with the way that the Democratic Party did the last election was that they didn't have a good message. The benefits are there. The good things are there where to look. It's just that they didn't articulate that message very well. If Trump is good at anything, and he's good at some things, the one thing he's very good at is picking a message and then just sticking to it, just no matter what. We talked about that in this like truthiness discussion of making the world to look like how he wants it rather than how it is. That works great for political campaigns of making it seem like he's the answer to all the problems and that there is an answer and Trump is it. That's great for convincing people to vote for you, but it's not so great for actually like doing things in government, because it created that level of uncertainty and unpredictability leads to really the situation we're in, which is that employers are hesitant to hire anyone because they don't know what tomorrow holds. They don't know how do you plan for a week, a month, a year into the future when we don't even know if the Supreme Court's going to weigh in on tariffs, right? If the Supreme Court doesn't weigh in on tariffs, that appeals court decision that said all of the tariffs or most of the tariffs are completely illegal and they all have to be paid back, that's going to have a ridiculous effect on the economy. And it's not going to be pretty, right? Because remember, like all the decisions that have been made since the tariffs have been announced are baked into the cake right now. The current market is a reflection of the reaction to that. If that suddenly gets upended, right? If the table just gets overturned, and all the tariffs have to be paid back to the tune of hundreds of billions of dollars, and all of these discussions and trade deals can't happen because the tariffs are all illegal, that's a whole mess. That's going to be like one of the worst political boondoggles, mistakes, clown show. in our lifetimes of just completely ridiculous situation. The point now is politics is about the future. And right now, there is an opening for the Democratic Party to win in the midterms and in the next presidential election if they pick a message and stick to it. And the issue is that the cost of living and inflation and all these things are going way up. And the answer to that is increasing collective bargaining, increasing union participation and membership, not decreasing it, not running away from it. If we don't figure out an answer to AI, people are going to lose their jobs in the tens of thousands, not the millions. And there's no easy answer to what people do and where they go. Most people do not have huge amounts of savings to rely upon for which to live their lives. They need a job. They need an income to pay for things like a place to live, food, healthcare. If you don't have, as a society, an answer for what people should be doing with their time, there's going to be unemployment, uncertainty, just complete like confusion as to what to do with one's time, right? Part of the reason for the New Deal was to just give people something to do, right? Just put them to work doing stuff, cleaning the forests, building roads, making bridges, building dams, right? Just give them something to do, because the alternative was people just lying around, millions of people, not doing anything.
With the fires, we need them to pick up those forests. Get Reagan. Yeah, I guess I would say that my response to the Atlantic article would be that, like, there would be, like, a unions plus approach. And you're talking about it when you talk New Deal. Because I think that workers need their interests vouched for. And yet, so do those not in the labor force and those unemployed, too. And because we got a lot of those. We'll link the labor force participation rate graph on the webpage. But here's an idea of local maxima and minima for you in the audio version. Describing it by voice is a little onerous, but it's essential to Mike and my discussion, so here we go. In December of 06, the labor force participation rate, seasonally adjusted, was 66.4%. I think that means that among non-institutionalized adults, 66.4% of them were either working or looking for work actively, you know, in a way that fit into the system. That's that high, the 66.4%, which is pretty close to the all-time high, which was reported by the St. Louis Fed, was followed by a drop, not a straight drop, but a general drop of 4% over the next decade until the LFPR was 62.4% in September of 2015. There was then a modest rise until the months just before COVID, when it had gone up by 0.9% to 63.3% in February of 2020. COVID hit, and in the shutdowns, 2 months later, it had fallen to its lowest level in 47 years, 60.1% in April 2020. Following COVID, there was, at least according to this graph, a pretty quick job market recovery, although not a total recovery, such that 3.5 years later, the LFPR rose 2.7% to 62.8% in, for example, August of 2023. And then in the last 2 years, it's gone down a bit, 0.5%, and the latest data I have is that it was 62.3% in August 2025. So we're about where we were 10 years ago in September of 2015 in terms of non-institutionalized adults participating in the labor force, which was itself a low post-08 recession. Just for information, info that we didn't have while we were recording this story, the high labor force participation rate, according to the St. Louis Fed, was in March of 2000 at 67.3%, while the low was in December of 1954 at 58.1%. Of course, the difference between then and now is that there were a lot less women in the workforce. It was a lot less common to see a woman working in the 1950s compared to now. But for the whole time, the labor force participation rate has been recorded, which is since 1948. We've been moving along a 9.2% span, and that's a big difference in terms of adults in the country without a stake over their livelihoods in the form of employment. The less than 10% represents tens of millions of people. If you think about that from way back in 07 to the height or the most severe beginning of the pandemic, we had fully 6% of the potential labor force just not in the labor force any longer. A contraction of the percentage of people utilized by the economy. Not just utilized by the economy, like they're the widgets in it, but making use of the economy as workers for themselves. It makes a big difference in a lot of people's lives. And I want more people employed in good jobs with their interests protected. Not just those who have the jobs, but those who want the jobs too. And we can do a lot better. And we did a lot better in the 90s. So I'm hoping the approach is both for those at the table and those who would like to approach the table.
For better or worse, I think people in part voted for Trump because they thought that he would go to the mat for them, that he was fighting for them, that he spun a tale, that he was actually making a difference, and he had an answer to their problems. Even if the answer was wrong, at least he made it seem like he had an answer. The issue I have with how messaging goes for the Democratic Party is that it's a little waffly. They want to have the corporate investment and money, because that's where the money is to fund campaigns and stuff. But they also support worker rights and worker and labor unions and protections. And it's just, it doesn't always send such a strong message. And I think that's why they lost the last campaign in part. Because, look, I think a lot of what's been happening is that the messaging is all over the place. Probably in part because Biden didn't keep his promise that he was just going to be a one-term president, that he was a transition president between the pandemic and what was next, and that they didn't make a concerted effort from the moment that Biden, inauguration day pretty much, from the moment Biden started being president in his first term, to anointing a successor and then doing the work to actually ensure that the successor could succeed. I think that's the issue, is that the Democratic powers that be in the Democratic Party, the donors and all that, like, they had a role to play, and they played it way too late by trying to oust Biden in the last second. It's not like these people lived in some kind of, like, wonderland of never seeing Biden, never interacting with Biden. It's not like they didn't know. It's just that they were protecting him. And I don't know. There has to be some courage on the part of the people with the power and the money in the Democratic Party to actually make a decision, like to not actually sit on the fence all the time of what direction the party's going. And at least right now, I'm seeing Newsom is the one who's actually, Newsom and Pritzker obviously are auditioning to be the next candidate for president, because they're out there like every day talking and just saying stuff and being really assertive. But I don't know. It seems like there's been an absence of just leadership, of people saying, I will lead the way. I will do something. I always liked Bernie just because he would present this argument over and over, but he'd also just go everywhere. Like, he'd go to Liberty University. He'd go just talk to any crowd, just show up and do rallies for free for anyone who wanted to show up. I don't see that level of political gamesmanship, as it were, the actual, like, show. Other than Bernie and AOC with their rallies right now, and a little bit with Newsom, with the social media stuff, when he did that debate against DeSantis, and some of that stuff, I get it. The big issue for the last election, for sure, was that they didn't actually have a successor lined up to succeed Biden in any real way. That it was this ad hoc, oops, we made a mistake, we got to figure out how to actually run an election before the election.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was just, the whole point is that, I guess the last word on this is, It's a terrible idea to back away from unions at all. Like, the prevailing winds right now of the future is there's going to be this showdown between AI and robots and people having jobs. And if there isn't, whoever has the answer to that question of what are people going to do to make enough money to exist this century, they're going to win. Whoever figures out that message, if they figure out a way to actually address the cost of living problems that people are going to face. Because if food becomes skyrocketing in terms of price, or housing, or healthcare, or any of these, the list is really long. If the price of any of those things skyrockets and people don't make enough money to pay for it, there's going to be a real issue of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people. You mentioned it with the labor participation rate being at what, 66%? That's a third of the potential workforce. It's not working. They're sitting it out. The question is then, what are they doing? Who's holding up the system if they're not? And the answer is those who are working. And the answer for how do you get better pay, benefits, job security, unions. It's the only leverage. Collective bargaining or unions. Those are the only leverage.
And who's the system working for if not for them?
In a democracy, people are voting. They're using their power ostensibly to benefit their lives, to improve their lives, not to make their lives worse. And to win in a democracy, in a two-party system, the parties have to actually craft a winning message. And I don't think the winning message is bow down to AI overlords and just accept the incoming robot revolution. I don't think that's the winning message. I think the winning message is stand strong together, right? The workers united will never be divided, that kind of thing. So long as people gain their income from working, as opposed to a huge investment fund that the country makes and gives out a basic income. That could happen, right? But that's a way different kind of situation than what it looks like is going to happen in the US. Right now, it looks like money's going to funnel upwards. We're going to have a huge share of the economic pie. It's going to be held in the hands of like 10 people. And they're going to dictate all of our lives to us because they own AI and robots and all the means of making any kind of money. And we either constrain them with government and regulation, or we open the floodgates and they just tell us how we live, right? It's not clear what the options are. Do we become Elysium? Have you ever seen the movie Elysium?
No, I haven't seen that
That
one.
one.
Okay. In Elysium, there's all the rich, wealthy people all live up in a space, and Earth is just this complete hellscape of automation and robots and just hyper enforcement of laws. And it's just very difficult. And there is a real contrast between no worker protections and all the money flowing into the hands of the few. That's an extreme scenario, but it's possible, right? There's millionaires and billionaires who are trying to make a ship out in the ocean, their own little multimillionaire utopia, free from
Right,
the
Sealand.
constraints of government and society, of the super hyper rich cruise ship out in the middle of the ocean. No, I think it's a bad idea to back away from unions. Like, go all in, 100%. It's just the way the future is going.
You mentioned Bernie, and he was always very good at reframing the conversation. What we are talking about is a country where the richest such and such 100 people have more wealth than the bottom 60%, or whatever it is, and people recognize X. And you mentioned welcoming or not welcoming our new AI overlords. And the guy who said that, of course, was Ken Jennings initially on Jeopardy with Watson. And afterward, Ken Jennings investigated why he had lost. And he's like, the AI could just push the button at the clock perfect time, and that was a huge percentage of it, because a lot of the game is hitting the button at the right time.
There's a lag time. There's a delay between when the question's asked and when you react to it. And computers don't have as much lag.
Mondays with Mike.